Underwater, Senator Hoffman, Senator Dyson, Senator Stedman, Senator Co-Chair Wilken, and myself, Senator Green, are here to start off the meeting, and we'll be taking public testimony on Senate Bill 131. If we can make it through, I think we can get through all the people who've signed up. Do we have an in-room sign-up sheet? Let's see. We also have people from Anchorage, Juneau, and Eagle River. While I'm waiting, are there any announcements, Senator Wilken, before we get started?
Yeah, thank you.
While we're waiting to, for the release in the House, we'll start taking testimony from Anchorage, from Roger Liebner.
Yes. Good morning. I'm Roger Liebner, and I'm testifying because I'm very concerned about Senate Bill 141. As a parent of two children, I'm concerned about the damage Senate Bill 141 will have on the future of public education in Alaska. My wife and I came to Alaska in 1977 and found an educational system growing and improving and possessing a very competitive salary and retirement plan relative to the lower 48. I understand we currently have had such a difficult time recruiting teachers that we've created many backdoor alternative paths to teaching that many times we've had to circumvent traditional employment standards, and that's primarily in the Bush area. The legislature recently approved legislation that would continue to allow hiring retired educators to fill these vacant positions. Teacher salaries are not competitive with the lower 48, which makes it difficult to hire the quality professionals we continue to demand. Senate Bill 141 seeks to establish a defined contribution plan like industry, yet the non-competitive salaries and the deteriorating retirement tiers compound the employment picture. The PERS system has the SBS component that the TERS system does not have. The TERS accepted the compromise long ago that involved maintaining a defined benefit plan and foregoing the SBS at that time. Senate Bill 141 is bad legislation and will further compound the recruitment and maintenance of educational employees in this state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. By the way, we're going to limit testimony to about 3 minutes. If you can keep your testimony to that length of time, we'd appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Weaver. Pat Wellington.
Madam Chair, good morning. My name is Pat Wellington. I have served as citizens of Alaska for nearly 50 years as a Deputy United States Marshal, State Trooper, Commissioner of Public Safety, Director of the Alaska State Troopers, a volunteer fire chief, and Chief of Police of Juneau. The last 27 years, I have served as an elected member of PERS, and the last 12 years as an elected member of ASPIP. I have read and heard reports that infer that the present governance structure of the PERS, TERS, and ASPIP is responsible for the current actuarial shortfall. These inferences are totally without merit, and I'll have more to say about that later. Allow me to describe the makeup of the PERS and TERS boards. 7 of the 10 members currently sitting on these boards were appointed by Governor Murkowski. Among the 7 are Richard Soley, a PhD in economics, Dick Schultz, a former state senator, Ellis Hanley, a former member of the State House, and George Sullivan, a former legislator and longtime mayor of Anchorage and one of the most highly respected public servants in Alaska. The Alaska State Pension Investment Board also has a distinguished membership. The chair is Wilson Condon, a Stanford Law graduate, former Attorney General, former Commissioner of Revenue, Gail Schubert from Unicleet, an attorney and former attorney with the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, Martin Peel, former acting director of the Alaska Permanent Fund, former president of the Ketchikan Pulp, and Jeff Sims, current finance director for the municipality of Anchorage. In addition to the distinguished board members, the board has hired 3 advisors who work with the board. The advisors are Dr. Jerry Mitchell, a former senior member of a Boston management firm and former CIO of a $30 billion Massachusetts retirement system, Dr. William Jennings, professor of finance at the U.S. Air Force Academy, and Tim O'Brien, a CPA and former trustee of the Colorado Public Employees Retirement System. Last fiscal year, ASPIP earned 15.1% returns on an investment. Last month, ASPIP was selected by Institutional Investors Money Management Organization as one of the 3 outstanding large public pension funds in the nation. Why propose a new board? Why mess with success? It has been inferred that tourist prison assets have in some way contributed to the actuarial shortfall. These boards do not set benefit structure. The legislature does. The boards and the elected members, in particular, have a peculiar interest in the financial soundness of the fund. The inference that members set lower contribution rates than recommended by the actuarial is preposterous and flies in the face of logic. Dig deeper and you will see that the adopted contribution rate brought most systems to 95 and 100% funding ratios in 2001. It wasn't until the actuarial assumptions were changed in 02 that the funding ratio dropped 20%. The TERS and PERS boards relied on experts. Will a new board ignore experts? Changing the board structure will not improve decisions. SB 141 creates a new defined contribution plan for new employees. How well thought out is the plan? The Department Administration wanted PERS and TERS board to buy off on a plan without exploring alternatives. Without a draft bill, the boards were asked to buy off on a concept with no details. You now have before you a bill with details. Are you willing? Are they well thought out? Did you cover all bases? And who did you confer with? I believe that the committee should move forward with defined contribution legislation only after you can answer four questions, and I hope you will write them down so you can provide the public with answers. Number one, if a police officer, trooper, or fireman with 4 years of service is killed in the line of duty, what benefits will be available to his or her survivor? Question number two, if a correctional officer is assaulted and becomes disabled, how does the defined contribution plan address his or her disability? Question number three, if a teacher or principal is killed or disabled in the line of duty, similar to what happened in Bethel a few years back, what benefits will be available to his or her survivor? Question number four, the fund status has been worse off in the past and still recovered to 100% funding. My question is, what's the rush? And just a word of caution, ma'am, as I close, I would urge you to check all the facts. Sometimes the picture is not always what some would lead you to believe. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Jim Duncan?
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the Senate Finance Committee. My name is Jim Duncan. I'm business manager for the Alaska State Employees Association that represents approximately 8,000 state employees at this time. Let me make it clear from the outset, I'm speaking in strong opposition to this legislation and the impact it will have on current employees as well as future employees. Clearly, if the underfunding, the perceived underfunding, is an issue that needs to be addressed, but I believe it deserves very serious and comprehensive review before this legislation progresses. We all know the causes. First, a decline in the stock market over the past year that no actuary projected. Secondly, the rising cost of health care costs that the actuaries failed to project accurately. And third, a change in retiree demographics. Retirees are living longer than they used to. We should understand very clearly that the current public employees, state employees I represent, and other public employees did not cause the decline in the stock market or the rising health care costs or the change in retiree demographics. They could not control any of those three factors, and they should not be asked to pay for it. However, you are asking them to pay for those three factors that were out of their control in this legislation. And let me just mention three ways that you are asking them to pay for it. One, this legislation would allow an increase in the employee contribution of up to 5% per year. That is clearly a direct impact on my members and other public employees' ability to maintain to maintain their status of ability. Let me give you an example. Our members, the members of the general government unit, the last pay increase they had was in 12-1-02, December of 02, 3%. Assuming our contract is approved, they'll get another 1.5% on July 1st of this year. That's a total of 4.5% over the past 2.5 years in pay adjustment. Doesn't keep up with the cost of living. This legislation, however, would allow a decision to be made that would increase their contribution to the retirement system by 5%. On July 1st. So they really would be taking a step backward and would be a serious impact on their ability to maintain their lifestyle. They're working in the middle of this state. They have families, they have children to clothe and send to school, they have whole mortgages to pay. Secondly, you're asking them to pay by moving future employees to pay by moving from a defined benefit system to a defined contribution system. You're unwilling to risk the system because of stock market decline and rising health care costs, but you're asking future employees to roll the dice and put their retirement at risk and give them no surety as to what they will have when they finally do retire. And finally, this legislation is going to have a serious negative impact on the ability for the state to recruit and retain state employees or public employees as a whole. The delivery of services to citizens of the state will still be expected, but there will be less employees to do that, and of course employees will not stay for a long period of time if they do not have either adequate wages or cannot be assured of a good retirement system. So I urge you to do the following before you move this legislation and before you proceed. I urge you to get an independent verification as to whether the amount of underfunding that is now asserted is correct. Have one other actuary take a look at that to determine if that amount is correct and what will be required as far as future contributions to begin to offset the problem if one does exist. Secondly, evaluate, and I think it needs to be done very seriously, evaluate the impact on the current PERS system if all of a sudden the pool of individuals contributing to that is reduced significantly. If you move all new employees to a defined contribution system and they no longer contributing to the defined benefit system, the current PERS system, I think the impact in the future could be very significant. And I'm not sure that has been looked at, at least I have not seen the information indicating what that impact could be. Three, carefully evaluate and understand the impact on recruitment and retention of employees who are required to deliver services to people of the state that this change will have. I believe it will have a very negative impact and we'll see a real problem of recruiting and retaining employees into public service, state service, and other public service jobs to deliver those services. And finally, carefully evaluate what the impact of an increased contribution is going to be on our current employees and their ability to maintain themselves in this state. I think that you're treading on waters here where you're getting into an unconstitutional area as far as increasing employee contributions for actives. That's another issue that will be explored in the future, but clearly is an issue of concern. So there are several steps I think you should take, Madam Chair. I would urge you to take those steps prior to moving this legislation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Stedman.
Madam Chair, if I could just make just a couple of quick points. On page 7 of the bill, line 22 is referenced by the previous commenter. Again, that's page 7, line starting on line 22. Talks about a potential increase in the employee contribution. There's some language in there on line 22 to line 24 that I'm sure is going to get struck through the process, and that limits the maximum increase per year at 5%. The reason that I think has almost a assured probability of getting struck is there's no reason to even move it 5%, and you couldn't calculate it on a currently this language looks at a potential split of the cost, not concerning the unfunded liability, but just for the benefits being accrued today or tomorrow. Currently, it's split roughly two-thirds the employer cost, one-third employee. And I think as a point in this bill, we'll have a discussion if we should leave it as two-thirds, one-third, or we should slide it up to a maximum of 50-50. If we went to a maximum of 50-50, you're looking at a total, roughly depending on if you're looking at PERS and TERS, of about a little over 2% increase or a little over 3% increase, which is a far cry from 5. And Madam Chairman, I don't know if changing the normal cost rate will even be in the final bill at this committee. Clearly, there's no intent of increasing employee contributions to pay for the $5 billion past service liability.
Senator Stedman, and I do want all those who are testifying and who are interested in this to understand that this is the first draft, and we are looking for input and for serious suggestions for amendments and rewrites in your areas of interest, and want to know what we do to solve what we see as a fairly impressive problem. Senator Bundy.
Well, thank you. And I would ask, as we go through the process, that folks would keep in mind a question I have, and that is, if the beneficiaries of the program are not responsible for the cost of the program, who should be?
Thank you. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Jim, for testifying, and I think you bring a lot of historical perspective to this. If indeed it is verified that we do need to make up some of that allegedly $5 billion shortfall, would you or your bargaining unit suggest that maybe that shortfall should be made up out of the earnings reserve account?
Madam Chair, is that a direct question to me?
I think so, Senator Senator Duncan.
Yes, thank you, Senator Dyson, for the question. Let me respond to that in a couple of ways. First of all, I think you need to explore, as I said, what is a shortfall, and then I think there's two or three, a couple other steps you should look at taking. One would be explore what recourse you might have against the actuaries who did not identify these variables, these changing variables, as far as the stock market, the increase in stock market impact, the rising care of healthcare, the rising cost of healthcare costs. I was around in a different position, not in the legislature, but in the previous administration, and the actuaries did not identify any problems while I was in that position. They did it after I left that position. But I think there is some liability on the part of the actuaries to be sure that they are using the proper variables and adjust the requirements accordingly. So I urge you to first explore that as a possibility. Secondly, then, I think there is historical precedent for the legislature recognizing that the beneficiaries are not the ones who have caused a problem. They should not be asked to pay for it. I don't recall the exact year, but that's when I served in the body you're currently serving in. The SBS program had a serious problem, executive life, junk bonds saw a serious decline in executive life. Was managing at that time, and there was a serious decline in value. The legislature, under leadership of your party, Senator Dyson, decided it was not the beneficiaries who should bear the brunt of that or the burden of that, and the legislature held the employees harmless, and I would urge you to do that this time. As to where you get the dollars to do that, first of all, verify what the dollar amount is. Secondly, go back against the, see if you can go back into the actuaries and have some recovery. And then, of course, it's your job to decide where that money would come from. If there's a proposal that comes to the table that you're going to address and to hold employees harmless, the 8,000 members I represent, the union I represent, we would seriously consider looking at that and supporting such a proposal.
Yeah, if I may respond. Yeah, Jim, I that's exactly the course of action I think we ought to take. Certainly make sure what the number is, see if there's any recovery, and all of us, I think, are very frustrated about decisions that were made and not made in the past. But final analysis, somebody's got to pay, and taking money from the permanent fund earnings account would be one option, and I would sure be interested if you and your bargaining unit would endorse that. But thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Jay Delaney.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm Jay Delaney. I live in Eagle River, and I'm representing myself at this hearing. I'm a retiree from the state. I spent about 28 years in various positions, mostly in the last 12 years as the director of DMV. So I certainly have a vested interest in this subject, and I'm in no way impartial about it. There's no doubt that the retirement system is underfunded. The amount may be questioned, but it's mostly because of a couple of years of down markets and extreme increases in health care. And a lot of folks suffered because of the down markets, and our permanent fund lost a great deal of money. But now you folks know better than the fool with the permanent fund, but not at taking a shot at the retirement system. This bill throws out a perfectly good system for something no one in the public or private sector can be proud of, and that doesn't seem to me that even solves any problems. It makes changes that make no sense, like the super board,
that's going to be populated by people who really know what they're doing. I don't think you can get more expertise than is currently on the boards that exist now, as Mr. Wellington was describing a few minutes ago. And the bill does nothing to solve the underfunding. In fact, it exacerbates the issue by removing all new hires from the system so there'll be no new contributions. I don't think this is a good bill, and I think the 28,000 or so other Alaskan retirees will agree with me, and I suspect most of the current employees also, and that's another 30,000 voters or so. I would urge you to scrap this legislation and do something constructive to help the situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. In Kenai, Larry Simmons.
Senator Green, thank you for allowing me to testify. My name is Larry Simmons. I'm the finance director at the city of Kenai. And I would just like to, first of all, commend Senator Stedman for his masterful presentation of this complex data. I've listened to his presentations, and I think he's doing a great job and wanted to say thanks. The problem is very complicated. I don't think it's a simple, well, the market dropped type of thing. It's my understanding that ASFIP's long-term return meets the 8.25% actuarial assumption. So I always cringe when I hear criticism leveled at the performance of the investments. Anyway, my perspective is, as an employer, it's been very difficult to budget for the 5% increases and very, very difficult to conceive of how we will pay for this when the rate is 25% or more for the next 25 or 30 years. My testimony to the PERS board was that the way that the city of Kenai will no doubt deal with this is to reduce staff. I don't see how we have an alternative unless the legislature funds this as apparently it's proposed in this bill. So I appreciate that, and I hope that the legislature will consider funding this problem. Although, you know, I don't know that it's all your responsibility either. One question that I did have is, I don't know why this cost of living adjustment on page 66 is in there. Surely the employees that are, or the retirees that are covered by this now, are not going to be in favor of this sort of thing, and I don't know why that's there. Other than that, I personally was in favor and filled out my questionnaire that the presenters committee put out, that I was in favor of a defined contribution program. I'm not sure an 11.5% contribution is enough, but I think it's great to have it on the table, and I'll be continuing to watch and see how things develop. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Larry. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I didn't get a clear idea, Mr. Simmons, that whether you were for the bill or against the bill.
Well, it's hard for me to say at this point whether I'm for it or against it either, Senator Olson. I'm for the legislature looking at all of the alternatives, and I think that this bill certainly brings a lot of alternatives to the table. I'm a little concerned that it's biting off more than should be chewed at one time, but I think some of the ideas are really on target. The thought that one board that has both the liability side and the asset side to manage appeals to me. Although I don't know that I agree for once with Mr. Wellington that the ASFIP board is doing a great job. And so, you know, I'm a little concerned about whether we can assemble the expertise necessary to manage these investments with a 9-member board as identified here.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Senator Olson. And in Juneau, Sam Trivett.
Madam Chair, I'm in Anchorage. Are you ready for testimony?
Yes, please.
Thank you very much. My name is Sam Trivett. I'm the president of the Retired Public Employees of Alaska. We represent folks who have worked in public service for many years and have retired. I personally worked for the state for over 32 years, all in criminal justice and law enforcement. I'm one of those people that Mr. Wellington was spoken of, and I could have been impacted by this as a result of a riot I was involved in years ago. Anyway, fellow members of RPEA and I have been attending and participating in the PERS, CHERS, and ASPED meetings for many years now. We've also been attending and or watching all of the Senate and House hearings on the PERS, CHERS, and ASPED issues this session. It appears that there has been little testimony from many of the people involved in these meetings from current or recent past members of these three boards and their professional staff consultants. Those involved with the boards for the last 10 years can give you a much more complete picture of what and why decisions were made. We recommend you invite them to the table now to ensure you have more complete information on which to base new legislation. And I can certainly give you some ideas of some of those people. Mr. Wellington has given you some of the names of some of the members, and there are other staff and former board members also that I think have a tremendous amount of expertise and knowledge. As a result, it appears that the sponsors of this legislation have some significant misconceptions about how the boards work, their processes, and why certain decisions are made. It further appears blame has been heaped on the boards for financial issues beyond the control of the board, such as the downturn in the economy, the rising medical expenses, and the actuarial assumptions, as Senator Duncan brought out. The boards are very aware of the underfunding and the increased costs, and they have been taking steps to reduce and contain the costs they can control. A good example is generic drugs. Working cooperatively with retirement benefits, with RPEA, and with Aetna, generic drug substitution has well surpassed what Aetna thought it could be possibly attained, and it's almost to the maximum possible level based upon the availability of generics on the market today. Another short example, the boards have been recommending denial of the ad hoc PRPA ever since the fund balances started dropping, even though the cost of living of retirees has continued to increase. The sponsors of this legislation acknowledge that the bill would not address any of the problems of the current underfunding. There is no guarantee that a new board would bring any more experience or expertise than the current boards and their very competent staff and professional consultants have. If there was some magic bullet to this, I'm sure that one of the other large pension funds in the lower 48 would have had discovered it by now. Medical costs are down from double-digit increases to much less than 10%, and part of that, frankly, is based upon the hard work of the PERS and CHERS boards, as well as Aetna, and also our retiree organization working with them. The trust funds, as Mr. Wellington said, have double-digit returns recently, almost twice what the actuarial assumptions are. The fund is not hemorrhaging, as one person commented last week. Don't fix what is not broken. One other quick practical issue. Part of my experience, Senators, is working with four various boards and commissions in the state, as well as in the private sector, nonprofit sector, for many decades. Frankly, I think that with all the work that these 18 members of the three boards do now, you're going to have a very difficult time trying to find 9 citizens of this state that will be able to take over the workload that these 18 people do right now. They have joint meetings all the time, they have specialized training, they do very critical committee work on a regular basis, and unless you have been attending all these meetings, you certainly will not be aware of that. And I can tell you, I've not heard any of these things discussed in the committee hearings, either in the House or the Senate thus far this spring. One more last thing, and that is that the PERS and CHERS boards do hear appeals from the decisions of the division administrator. They have firsthand knowledge of retirees, employers, and employee issues. They issue fair decisions, and they don't roll over because the hearing involves retirees or employees. They have decades of experience, and their system is working. Look at their decisions. Their record is excellent. RPEA will be recommending to all Alaska's approximately 28,000 retirees, as well as active state government employees and other political subdivision employees and teachers, to work to defeat this bill. You've only scratched the surface of possible fixes to the system that will provide real solutions. We ask that you talk to your current and recent past PERS, CHERS, and ASPED board members to help you come up with ideas. And for the committees, I won't go into those today, but In a couple of hours, I developed a list of about a page long of some of the many things that I think can be done to help save money, to help the fund improve, and I'd be glad to pass it on to the committee. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Senator Lucan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sir, this is Gary Wilkin from Fairbanks. It's not my job here to point fingers, but it is my job here to try to fix a system that I think is broken. The wheels may not be coming off the wagon, but the lug nuts are loose, and that's why we're sitting here. We were handed in the last 2 years a bill for $170 million that 15 months ago we had no idea was happening. If that's not bad enough, we're being told that for the next 20 years, we'll be asked to contribute half of a teacher's salary to retirement, and under the PERS system, 30% to 35% to a retirement system. I think it is broken, and there's plenty of blame to go around, and part of the blame rests on the boards, because I think the proof is in the pudding. I think it's perfectly wise for us and proper for us to question the involvement of everyone, from the actuarials to the boards, because obviously when you're faced with $170 million invoices and faced with a daunting contribution rate, there's something broken. And that's what we're trying to do. And SB 141 is the start of that. I suspect that there'll be a lot of changes in this bill. But this morning, for Mr. Wellington and Larry from Kenai and you, sir, to come to defend the board's lack of involvement or lack of blame in this, I find a little bit distressing. I would rather say, look, we did the best we could. We have a system that today is going to burden, if not change, the people of Alaska for a generation. That's what we're trying to do here. And I want to just make sure that you and others that are going to come to say that the board's hands are clean, they're not clean. And that we need their help and all those good people that Mr. Wellington talked about, we need their help to fix it. Because I think the boards are going to change, and they're going to change because the current system doesn't work. So thank you.
Anyone else's hand raised? Okay, thank you. I believe that. Is there anyone else? Okay, in the room, Peggy Callan.
Thank you.
I hope I said your rank.
You did well.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
You can introduce yourself and say who you represent, please.
I'm Peggy Callan, Superintendent of Schools, Juneau School District. And thank you, Senator Green and committee members. I appreciate your being here and listening to our testimony. And I agree that the retirement system for PERS and TERS needs addressing, and appreciate the Senate taking the leadership for addressing the retirement concerns. Our school board, the Juneau School District Board of Education, has not taken an official position on this bill at this time. I will be back in touch with you when we do. My initial concerns in reviewing it are with retention, the new retirement system's effect on retention and recruitment for teachers. In particular, retention. Quality teaching, quality learning, quality instruction depends on quality teachers and instructors and staff, and it is no longer a buyer's market. We used to, Juneau School District's a wonderful place to live, Juneau's a wonderful place to work, and at the job fair where we go to recruit teachers, we used to have a line across an auditorium from that end of this room to that, and waiting for wonderful candidates. We now have a trickle. There is no line. There is a person that comes every few minutes. It is a different place. And so as you're considering this, the answer I don't know, and I encourage you to find out the answer to in terms of research, is how this compares with other states and basically the other markets where we're competing for teachers in, and the effect that this would have in terms of attracting that very important people to our system, the teachers. In terms of this linkage with the base student allocation, this obviously is concerning. The again, understanding the link, but also understanding that, as I'm listening, that the revision of the retirement system is even is very complex, and having adequate funding for students in Alaska linked to figuring out all these very complex answers is frankly frightening. And then finally, the numbers that are in the bill with the linkage, the 49-19, is not adequate for Juneau, and I testified on March 9th to that effect. And so I encourage you to raise that number as you're proceeding with this. We appreciate your consideration.
Senator Bundy.
Thank you, and thank you for your testimony, Superintendent. I have to confess I'm a former teacher, and I was blessed with an opportunity to teach when there was greater demand for teachers than there were teachers available. And so teachers at that time could pick and choose where they chose to go to. So I think this cycle goes up and down, back and forth. My question is, when you go to those job fairs, is it possible that other states are experiencing a trickle as well?
I think it's a nationwide issue, but and I certainly acknowledge that. And there are places, a lot of the large urban areas, which are in a lot worse state than we are. But again, I want to poise us as in the best, encourage us to, as a state, and encourage you to cooperate in poising us in the best position possible for that recruitment. A lot of those places also give $10,000 signing bonuses and things like that that we have not been able to do, and so we don't have some of the finances to compete in that way. And so our good retirement system, I think, has been one of the the carrots that we have had. And I do understand in the long range effect, and that we need to consider and address it, but just want to do so in a competitive way.
And if I might, and I hope you share our concern that if we look at the studies and the empirical data, to use your terms of art, that if things continue the way they are, for every two new teachers you hire eventually, there's a third one you won't be able to hire because of the monies that you're going to have to put into the retirement system. That in 1975 we had 20,000 state employees, including teachers, supporting 1,700 retirees. Last year we had 43,000 state employees supporting 28,000 retirees. And if that continues, we're very concerned that there simply won't be possible for people like you to actually hire new people.
Through the chair, I certainly do. And again, I opened with thanking this group and this body for taking on this very difficult and complex task. And I think we definitely need to address the retirement systems for all our employees. We have a lot of PERS employees in the in our school districts as well. So it's PERS and TERS that that we need to address. And we want a strong retirement system and strong benefits, and we one that we can afford. And because again, I applaud this body for providing additional funding to education, and the additional funding though and has been going into the PERS and TERS and not into the classroom, which is where I agree we want to have a go and make a difference for students. So we share those objectives certainly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions of Ms. Cowan? Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the room who wishes to testify? My hand.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Senators, my name is Bruce Ludwig, and I'm the business manager of the Alaska Public Employees Association, American Federation of Teachers. And I'd like to thank Senator Stedman for making a very complicated subject fairly easy to understand. And I'd like to laud the committee for having some good goals that help drive you. but I think you missed the most important one, and that's the recruitment and retention of qualified people. We represent about 8,000 active employees and 3,000 retirees throughout the state. 2,000 of those are state supervisors and confidential employees. They're the ones that are involved in the hiring. I've heard nothing but difficulties in recruiting for the last 5 years. We can't hire troopers. We can't hire fish biologists. We can't hire nurses. Anything in a scientific discipline is difficult to recruit. We can't hire engineers. We go out 3 and 4 times to recruit for them. One of the biggest benefit, probably the only benefit from an employer of having a retirement system, is to attract quality employees, people that you can rely on, you want to keep them around. Right now, very few states have a defined contribution structure. And I think if you look at it from an employee standpoint, it would cost more to create a defined contribution structure that would be as attractive as a defined benefit. Dollar for dollar, I think a defined benefit is something that people look at and they can count on what their retirement benefit is at the end. They don't have to worry about the stock market. They don't have to worry about which investments they pick. It's something that they can count on. They aren't individual investors by and large. And by having funds with a defined benefit, you've got professional investors that take care of the money. The reason we're in the hole right now is the same reason that everybody's in the hole. The stock market just dropped out for 3 years. Health insurance is climbing at astronomical rates. I mean, something has to happen there. Something has to happen on a national level. We're feeling it in our day-to-day lives. We're feeling it in workers' comp. I mean, it goes to a whole bunch of problems. As far as the SB 141, obviously we're very opposed to a defined contribution. And I think, like I said, I think even dollar for dollar, you can get more bang for the buck with a defined benefit than you can a defined contribution. There's no disability retirement. Currently, if you're hurt on the job or off the job, part of your money goes to help pay for a retirement to help take care of you if something happens to you that you can't continue working. In the future, I guess that'll fall on the state through Medicare or whatever, and through the workers' compensation system, which is already burdened. There's no death benefits that the defined benefit plan has. We think that you need to, and the one thing the bill doesn't do is it doesn't address the $5 billion deficit. So no matter what happens, people are still going to, you know, give up one teacher to have two in the classroom because this bill doesn't fix it. That's a past debt, and somehow we need to figure out how to deal with the past debt. But throwing the baby out with the bathwater, I don't think is the answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Senator Stedman.
Madam Chairman, you know, I think it'd be beneficial in the discussion if some of the groups, employee groups in particular, if they feel the contribution rate proposed for the defined contribution section puts them at a disadvantage for employment and retention, hiring and retention, that they come forward with recommendations on that rate. Right now, In the bill, the state would put in a roughly 8.25%, depending on if we're dealing with Georgia, Persia, what have you. But clearly, we're open for ideas, and if they feel that rate is too low, I would like to hear what rate structure that they feel should be in place, so they are competitive by their viewpoint on retention and employment or seeking new employees. Thanks. Madam Chair.
Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two questions, but first an observation. Mr. Ludwig, just to make sure the record's clear, what we found out at this table, the reason we're in this predicament that we're in today, was commonly thought to be the stock market. That's not the case at all. The stock market underperformed our portfolio by 4% for 20 months. Other than that, the projections were on or above the actuarial's projections. So it's a common misperception that we're here because of the dot-com bubble burst. That's not the case. Two things. Do you have any empirical data that would we hear a lot about not being able to attract good employees because of the retirement system. Do you have any data on behalf of your members or just those that would be in your bargaining unit that would show to what degree the concept or the retirement plan is part of their decision to be hired by the state of Alaska, or for that matter, any place? Any data?
I don't have any. I don't know if any has been compiled or.
Yeah, a lot of folks just say, you know, we're going to run people off because we have a defined contribution and because of this and that. So far, I've been able to find anything that tells us that the retirement system is a major contributor to the decision as to whether one is going to go to work, particularly first-time hires. The other thing is, do you have any of your members that are members participate in the SBS program?
Yes.
Do you? And what would their That's obviously a defined contribution. Any discussion or any thoughts on a comparison between SB 141 and the SBS plan? Do your members generally support the SBS plan?
Yes, sir. But they also have a defined benefit plan backing them up.
Okay.
My personal retirement's real similar to what 141. I can't come close to PERS or SBS. I mean, SBS has had phenomenal performance.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Ludwig.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, I'm hearing from a number of constituents that our state employees that are sharing their concern, the difficulty of finding qualified employees, and that positions remain vacant for quite a while. And of course, we're all captive of our own experience. And so I think back when I first hired on as a teacher with the, you know, basically the state of Alaska. That's where at least half the money comes from for teachers. And salary was far more important to me than something that was 25, 30 years down the road is retirement. And so I guess I'm tagging on to Senator Wilken's question in that it'd be interesting to know which impact, which has greater impact, beginning salaries or retirement benefits. And of course, every dollar we put into retirement is a dollar we can't put into beginning salaries. And you've already said that we don't have the data on that, but I'm wondering how we might achieve that information.
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, speaking from personal experience and drawing on discussions with other people, I don't think the average person even thinks about retirement until they're 35 or 40. They'll look at you're hiring somebody, they'll look at the salary. They'll look at the benefits too, but the salary is what can I use to pay my day-to-day bills? Somewhere around 35 to 40, retirement becomes real important because you start looking a little over the horizon and saying, well, I better be prepared for this if I'm lucky enough to live that long. So, you know, that's when people start going into deferred comp and others. Both the state and the political subdivisions they don't just draw new people, you know, into the workforce. They're drawing from all stratas of the workforce, people at the top, people in the middle, people at the bottom. So I think you need something that's attractive to everybody to the best that you can. Now, we're lucky with the state because we do have the SBS system, and there's a defined contribution system that's attractive to the younger people, and there's a defined benefit system that's attractive to the middle and the older workers.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. But when you look at a defined contribution plan versus defined benefits plan, the suitcase plan has to be the defined contribution plan. Gives an individual more mobility to get up and leave the state and go someplace else. But if other states had the same plan, then maybe we could be on equal footing, but I think we heard the testimony earlier that many states don't have the defined contribution, the suitcase plan to get up and say they want to move to Alaska. If we move away from the defined benefits plan, you know, I think that it can be said that when that individual is 35, 40, 45, they have to think twice on whether or not they want to move away and start a whole new retirement plan because of their expertise, their longevity, the possibility of brain drain, the defined benefits plan is one that to me would seem to be more lucrative and have more chance of retraining or stopping the brain drain. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, sir. It's an anchor that keeps people here. Right now, there's, you know, if David Rayom did a study in regards to the Public Safety Employees Association thing that was published in the Anchorage Daily News, and it talked about how salaries in the state have fallen behind all other jurisdictions. You know, we don't offer the high salaries we did when Senator Bundy and myself came up here and went to work. We offer middle-of-the-road salaries. So when we offer middle-of-the-road salaries and people can go to Arizona and make just as much money at a job or more than they can make up here, you got to have something else to attract them. And, I mean, private sector's predominantly 401k. Public sector is still very predominantly defined benefit. That's one of the things that attract people to public service.
And I make those comments, Madam Chairman, not because I'm opposed to any changes. I said before at this table that the $5 billion plan deficit or short funding needs to be addressed. But as was said also, we as a state are probably far better off than three-fourths, if not more, of the state's retirement programs as they presently exist. Maybe we should be looking at, as I said again, looking at changing the boards and unifying them as the first step, but to try to contemplate massive changes when everyone agrees we need to look at retention recruitment and retention as a major factor in anything we do. This may be just taking too big of a step all at once, and we should possibly be looking at legislation in increments of trying to rectify this problem. And again, it's been stated that we are doing nothing in this legislation to fill this $5 billion hole, but I agree that something needs to be done. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Bundy.
If I might just, Senator Hoffman has caused a thought here. I know he regrets that, but. But I'm thinking about, you know, two sides to every coin, and the notion that if we have a defined contribution that people in mid-career could pick up and leave, and then there is a brain drain that could occur, and that is a factor we should be very concerned about. However, another factor we might be concerned about, and I've heard from a couple of people lately threatening to leave Alaska if there's any change to this, is the old, one of the ironic or sardonic definitions of sourdough. There's sour on Alaska and they don't have enough dough to leave. And if the other side of this coin may be that there are people who are basically burnt out, and that's the greatest concern, I think, in education, but are hanging around for retirement. And we surely don't want to encourage that any more than we want to encourage the brain drain.
I do think the portability characteristic of the plan is something that many of us never even thought of when we were, you know, first being employed, and now is a great thing because we find some of the demographics show far greater movement of people
and not going to a place and staying there for 40 or 50 years and working their entire career, but rather doing 7 or 10 year stints in different places. And that's not bad. But I've never really heard a lot of good ideas and suggestions today and requests, and I hope the people are still online who earlier made comments, because some of them are very good, and some of the people they thought we should contact and people we should be talking to and get information from and different things to consider. And I'd like to hear from them. I'd really prefer it in writing so we could get that very specific information, because as a sponsor has said, and of course this is a Senate finance bill, but Senator Stedman's, as our kind of the investment guy, is taking the lead on it, that this is just the beginning. We are very open to the conversation, because we, as the finance members, are incredibly worried and troubled that every time the increase for the current year is talked about, we are the deep pocket, regardless of which public agency, school district, our municipality is involved. There is the expectation that the state of Alaska is going to continue funding it. And I can assure you, the state of Alaska is not going to continue funding the shortfall and the increase. It is a problem bigger than all of us. And if we can't figure out, and I'm not talking to you, I'm talking to everybody, but if we cannot figure out what to do about this, the state of Alaska is not going to play, is not going to be the one who comes in with the money to fund that that increase each year. And that's certainly my preference. Now, there's 59 other people in the building who may have different ideas, but I do not see it unless we absolutely make it a priority that we figure out first how to reorganize, how to create a new system, how to make this better, require the department in the formation of any new plans and policies that they be very cost-effective, very efficient, and have mechanism by which there's cost savings built in, health reimbursement, and I know Senator Dyfen's interested in health savings, whatever it takes to get the individual employee involved in their life, in their health care, and in their savings. Because this is not going to be a strictly state of Alaska funded plan. And we're not going to have $5 billion come from the permanent fund to make this all better. And with that said, I want everyone to think of it in terms of what can we do? What needs to happen? What amendments do you have to bring to this? I would rather see that than someone saying, there's nothing wrong, we don't need to change anything, and don't do it because it's bad for retention. I would expect if we went back to the transition from Tier 1 to Tier 2 and Tier 2 to Tier 3, we would find the exact conversation having gone on and predictions of very grim forecast for employment and sustainable employees. Some may argue, well, the proof is where it is. We can't hire anyone now. But I think I'd have to argue on that. But now we do have one other person online. John Brown, Fairbanks. Thank you, Bruce. If you want to stay there, you're fine. Oh, excuse me a minute, John. Senator Olson has a question. It may be for Bruce Ludwig.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Ludwig, thanks for your testimony this morning. Obviously, the discussion has been around defined contributions and defined benefits and those plans and whatever else is there. But I guess I'd like to look at the idea that of having one board, and more specifically the makeup of the board. As you look at those members, those nine members that are there, do you have any suggestions from the group that you represent as to how that, should that be the same, the makeup of the third? Or?
If we were going to assume that that was going to be the makeup, I would certainly recommend having the two, the PERS and the TERS employee, be elected by the TERS and PERS participants and retirees.
Even though there already is a PERS and TERS representation on the main, of the, one of the main members.
But they're appointed by the governor, who appoints all the others. So I mean, the employees themselves don't have a voice except through somebody that the governor appointed.
So numbers aren't bothering you.
was the point that you're more concerned with.
Yeah, I mean, I'm concerned about the nine-member board. The complaints I hear about the Pros and Tours board are obviously different than what you're hearing. I hear that they won't approve occupational disabilities and things like that. I mean, I don't hear the other side that you're obviously hearing. So, I mean, I don't see the problem.
Yeah. But Bruce, do you not think it's strange that by the time the information got to us, it was so in trouble. I'm very troubled that not one board, not one investment board, not one PERS or TERS members came to us and said, do you realize what's going on? No one said one word to us. We asked the members of those three boards from this table last spring, go forth and create a list of things we need to change. What can we do in legislation to help make it better? And consider a Tier 4 plan. They had some very hardworking subcommittees on either board who worked on the Tier 4 diligently for months and came back in November and their respective boards turned it down. And at that point, we had no suggestions, we had no recommendations, we had the status quo. The status quo is not satisfactory. So, but I still want to plead with everyone, if you have suggestions, if you have anything you want to add to this or change, let us know specifically, line, page, verse, and let us, you know, Senator Stedman's ready to, he's ready to work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now back to John Brown. Thank you for waiting.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I came today to talk not so much about the details, looking at the long-term consequences of a defined contribution plan for our state. If the numbers are out, I urge the committee, it's very simple to go online, go to Google, just type in 401k per capita distribution, and you'll see some articles there that will show you that a defined contribution plan is not a pension. And it never will be for 90% of the people out there. So I worry considerably a lot about changing to a defined contribution plan for not only for retention, but just for the well-being, economic well-being of our state and for our citizens.
Okay, John, just a minute, please. I need you to go back, introduce yourself, and give the person or organization you represent for the record, please.
Sure, I'm sorry. My name is Sean Brown. I live in Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm the president of the Fairbanks Central Labor Council, representing some 10,000 workers here in Fairbanks.
Okay, thank you. Now the record's complete. Thank you.
Okay, just to continue, I mean, some of the statistics you'll see is the numbers of people that take money out of their defined contribution plans and use it for buying a house, buying a car, whatever, vacation. They're not a pension plan, and that's why I think the fact that changing to a defined contribution plan does absolutely nothing to solve the unfunded liability and will, in the future, have less people with a real pension plan and be able to take care of themselves and more dependent on society in some form or another to take care of them. Just a big mistake. There's hundreds of ways to address the unfunded liability. I'm not prepared today to talk about which one I think is the best way, but I definitely think defined contribution is a huge mistake for us economically and socially. I don't know if the members of the committee realize, but I know that over $40 million, well over $40 million, and I would probably say, I don't have all the numbers together yet, probably over $50 million a month in defined benefit contribution plans come into this state every month. That's a huge economic impact. And if you were to switch to defined contribution, I think you'll see over time a huge loss in our economic engine those defined benefit plans are now driving in our state. So with that,
could you explain that, please? I'm not sure I understand.
Well, if people do not retain, and people don't, in the defined contribution plan, they just don't keep the money there. It doesn't build up to the point where it makes the kind of money a defined benefit plan does, creates the kind of wealth a defined benefit plan does, because they don't save it long enough. They don't leave it in there. And so you don't get that roll-up from the interest rates. You know, you got a $2 billion plan. I am also a member of the Operating Engineers. Our plan's got $2 billion in it. You make 10% on $2 billion, you're talking a huge amount of money. But when people are individuals, don't leave that money there to build up. It doesn't make that kind of roll-up on interest rates when you have a good year. And that's one thing I would say about us, too. You know, it definitely needs some work on the unfunded liability, but you know, we've got time to do that. And if we leave it whole and keep it keep as much money building in there as it can, we have a better chance of that fund itself helping to fix the problem down the road when we have good investment years. If we stop putting money into it, it's just going to make it worse.
Thank you.
Put it to defined contribution. That's what you're going to do. You're going to stop putting money into the plan.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Oh, Senator Bundy has a question, John.
Well, a comment as a participant in SBS, which is a defined contribution plan. I don't think you can pull the money out of that willy-nilly, and I believe that the proposal that we have in front of us for defined contribution, if you left the employment of the state, then you could take your money out, but you wouldn't decide you're going to Disneyland this year and pull your money out of your defined contribution plan. It's no different than SBS. You don't pull it out until you either retire or leave the employment of the state.
I think you need to check into that, Senator, because that's not my understanding. You can get your money out of SBS.
Okay, thank you. Was there anyone else? I saw another hand up. Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you, Mr. Brown.
Thank you.
Appreciate your testimony. And by the way, again, he brings up a good point. If you have suggestions or solutions for the $5 billion unfunded liability, and you want to send those to us, since that seems to be a great point of conversation, we'd like to be interested in hearing those as well. Okay, and Kevin Ritchie.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Kevin Ritchie, Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League, and I will probably be talking to you several times, but just to kind of summarize where we're at, we've been meeting with some school district finance people and others, with some university people and a number of municipal officials for the past 6 months or so. I also spent some time with the PERS TERS boards and the process they went through. And this is one of the two top priorities of the Alaska Municipal League, is to deal with the PERS issue. Obviously, the funding for the next 2 years is really critical to being able to provide services at the local level, and examining the entire system and seeing what can be changed and what makes sense. I just wanted to say that the depth of information and the presentations that I've seen so far are very impressive, and it means there's a great depth of understanding both on this committee, within the legislature itself, staff, and the Department of Administration. And I think it would be wrong to think that anybody would be for or against this bill. The question is, what needs to be changed? And I think the fact that you've said many times that this is a platform to talk about changes and issues, I think, is exactly the way to proceed. And I think all the issues should be on the table whenever you have a problem of this depth. So the last thing I want to say is that there's enough of a problem for everybody. The PERS-TERS system itself actually is close to two-thirds municipalities, school districts, and the university. It's not just a state program. And so we're hoping to come back to you and work with you as productively as possible. We're having another teleconference this afternoon to discuss the bill. Your staff was gave us the presentations and so on to send out, and so we hope to be talking to you more in the future. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Ritchie, the organization you represent frequently has discussions with the legislature about municipal revenue sharing. And I just point out that in 05, 06, and 07, the municipal revenue sharing that PERS and TERS have caused is over $250 million. And as the co-chair said, this is municipal revenue sharing that is not going to continue. So it's really incumbent on you folks to work with us to come up with some answers, because I know my own municipality probably wouldn't like to reach into their pocket for their share of that $250 million.
Any other comments at the table?
Thank you, Kevin. Mary Frances, did you want to come up? Is there anyone else that wants to sign in? Please do so, because we are on a very accelerated timeline on this, and I would appreciate your testimony today.
Mary Frances, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Mary Frances. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Association of School Administrators. We have several school superintendents in town for a fly-in this weekend, and we spent time yesterday talking about this bill as well as many others. And as there is a consensus among those superintendents who are here that we are very supportive of any efforts to overhaul and to improve our state's retirement system. You've heard all of the concerns, but we definitely feel that there is a need for additional work, and we certainly appreciate the work this committee has done. Our major concern, about which we have consensus and probably no surprise, is tying the base student allocation for the 06 budget to this bill. So I just wanted to say we appreciate the tremendous efforts on the part of the committee, and we'll work with you on those changes, but that is a concern to us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Tom Purvey.
Senator, my name is Tom Harvey, Executive Director of NEA Alaska. We have 90% of the TERS system are our members. About 30% of the PERS system are our members. I wasn't planning to speak this morning. I was waiting to provide a little more comprehensive testimony in writing to you, but given your accelerated schedule, let me make a few comments. And first of all, we appreciate the work of Senator Stedman. He has been in contact with us and has communicated with us on a number of issues. And most specifically, I appreciate his comments this morning that the language on page 7 was not his language, and he expected that language would not be in the final bill from this committee. The second point is I appreciate Senator Wilkins' comments that he is tired of hearing that the stock market is the cause of the problem. He's absolutely right. The stock market is not the cause of the problem. The ASPID board and its investments have far exceeded what has been necessary to sustain the system as the system was defined by the actuaries. I think the first statement that has to be looked at is how the assumptions were changed that in 2002 that caused the going from what appeared to be full funding to a $5 billion problem. I've heard some answers which seem plausible. I've not heard a lot of answers to that question, and hopefully in the next couple of months we'll be able to delve more into that and find some real answers to why those assumptions are the right assumptions and therefore why a $5 billion problem. Given that, I think the question then becomes, how do you build a system to avoid the $5 billion problem? And I don't know the answer to that, since I don't know the answer to why the assumptions were changed. But most specifically, let me say a little bit about a defined contribution plan. I'm not opposed to defined contribution plans. The union that I'm the management of has a defined contribution plan. But it's a group of 25 people, 25 very highly compensated people who have the ability to make investments and, frankly speaking, have the time to make decisions about their investments. What I'm concerned about is the average educator, the average public employee who doesn't have that time to make those kinds of investment decisions on a regular basis. And I wouldn't be speaking to you as a hypothetical. I want you to very closely study Nebraska's experience for the past 22 years, because they, in fact, went through a defined contribution plan for state employees. And what they found, and therefore abandoned this year, the defined contribution plan solely as a pension system. They have now a mixed system. They discovered that the average individual makes investments on a more conservative basis than they need to be making them, and therefore end up losing 2 to 3% a year. And therefore, over a 30 to 40 year period of time, as this bill would require for retirement, they would lose close to 100% of what they could have gained had the investments been done by a group of people who have a better understanding of the investment environment, such as the Aspen Board. It's also an issue of compensation. Do they have enough money to, in fact, contribute what is necessary? I do believe that the percentage that's in this present bill, if you calculate that out on what our members are presently making, when they retire, they will be coming back to the state for more assistance because they won't have enough to retire on. Particularly in the area of once they pay for their medical, which is another part of what this bill says. Once they pay for their medical, they won't have much left to pay for the taxes that they should be paying for their property. They'll be having to pay for food and clothing, which they won't have, I believe, if you do the calculation, enough money for the standard of living that they presently have. And I think that is the promise of a pension plan, that when you retire, you'll be able to retire at the same standard that you did as a good servant to the state, which is what the public service is all about. If they're in private practice, that's not a promise made to them. And that, I think, is a distinct difference between what happens in the private sector and what happens in the public sector. The issue of retention, I would agree 100%. Anecdotally, I have heard stories that people came to Alaska, particularly educators, because of the retirement system and because it was A, 20 years in long, B, it had a good medical component to it. But I do not believe it was a major factor in most folks coming to the state to teach here. What I do believe and know from the studies we've done amongst our members, it is one of the top three factors of why they stay. Their satisfaction on the job is number one. Their salary is number two. Their retirement is number three. The retirement keeps them here for at least 20 years, or beginning in 2011, 25 years. Under a defined contribution plan, as I believe it's defined in the bill, and if I'm wrong, I apologize, We've not had a lot of time to study the final draft of the bill. But under this bill, after 5 years, I'm vested. If you look at the data of public school educators, the fifth year is the year of the itch, years 3, 4, and 5. And in those years, they start to make decisions. Matter of fact, the statistics right now, we lose 48% of educators in the first 5 years. We lose them, period. We only have 52% left, and that 52% are making some decisions. In a state that doesn't provide enough supply for the demand, we are in fact in a highly competitive situation. And if what we do is divine a system that allows them on the fifth year of the itch to return home because they miss family, to a state where they may be making as much as they could in Alaska because we are not at the competitive edge we were in the 80s and the early 90s, then we are at risk of not retaining them. The portability works against us. I would agree with the chair that portability is a great thing. It brings in new ideas, it brings in new concepts. In education, portability is less of a good thing. It's stability in that school with a faculty for an extended period of time that actually affects student achievement. And that is the goal that we should be talking about, is the effect of student achievement and how do we continue to provide a great education and in fact improve on that education for our children. So with that, Madam Chair, I will end my comments and entertain questions if there are any.
Any questions for Tom? Senator Tyson.
Yeah, thank you. I listened carefully to your testimony and I appreciate it. Did you infer that kind of as a de facto contract that both sides understand that public employees will be able to retire with the same lifestyle level financially as when they were working, and therefore that we as a state have a responsibility to make sure that everybody has a retirement income that's, I don't know, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, if I inferred there ought to be exactly the same compensation, I apologize. I do believe, though, that the folks who are public servants do expect to have a similar standard of living. They've already paid for their house, so they don't need to make mortgage payments. They've already paid for some other things, so they don't have all of the expenses that they have when they are an active employee. And therefore, they don't have to have the same compensation. But I do believe they have a belief that they're going to have a dignity in retirement that they had in their active life, and particularly public educators have a dignity in their active life that they truly expect to have. And I believe that all public servants expect the same thing.
Did you want to respond, Senator Dyson?
No, I don't think we're going to go very far with this.
Okay.
But for the folks who haven't been wise with what they've done with their money, there's still a social contract that the taxpayers of the state have to make up whatever delta there might be.
Again, through the chair, Senator Dyson, I think what will occur is that those folks will end up at a level, some call it a poverty level, where they will in fact then have to come to the state for welfare. I know that's happening in some states, and I would hate to think that that would happen in this state.
Okay, and lastly, if I might, I was impressed because your testimony was very clear and logical, and you mentioned three things that bring teachers here, but I didn't hear in that list was a love for our state, its beauty, resources, opportunities, and people. And I didn't hear that something that brings teachers here and hopefully would keep them is a commitment to and a calling to serve our kids. You know, all of us at this table know that one of the tragedies of Alaska's history is people coming from somewhere else to take something from us, fur, gold, land, fish, and then make their money or take our resources and go back home. It's always my hope that people will either stay here or come here because of, I don't know a better term, but a love and commitment to this extraordinary state and its people. And I guess I want to disincentivize, if that's a word, the transient pirates. And so I would really like to know how we can, at some future discussion, attract people because of who we are and where we live instead of just monetary stuff. Thank you.
Tom? Madam Chair, I don't want to leave the impression from Senator Dyson that people don't come here as a calling to teach children. That is clearly a part of everybody's who enters the public school doors incentive, number one incentive. The issue is it an incentive once they reach retirement, because they're no longer dealing with that issue. So the second issue of retirement and staying here, I think if you look, matter of fact, the data I have, the number of retirees, education retirees that stay in Alaska has increased, and I suspect will continue to increase if they can maintain their dignity in retirement.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the room who would like to testify today? Step forward. Steve Bradshaw?
Yes, I am.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I see it.
Thank
you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome, Steve.
Thank you.
You just give your name and who you represent.
My name is Steve Bradshaw. I'm Superintendent of Schools in Sitka, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak. I came here today. I had checked first that I wasn't going to speak, and it was truly because I don't know that much about the issue or the bill. I haven't had the time to look at it. I appreciate the courage that you're exhibiting today. One of the things I'd like to say that I've learned since being in Sitka, the Tlingit elders have taught me that it's always culturally correct to apologize for what you're about to say if it offends anyone. And so I think that's one of the neatest things about the Tlingit culture is to say, listen, what I'm...
We start out every meeting with an apology. It's quite okay.
If I say anything that offends anybody, that's not my purpose. I compare your job somewhat to my job. We're going through the budget over at Sitka, and there's never going to be enough money in budgets. That's just the name of the game. What you're trying to do here, I think, is solve a problem. So I appreciate the courage that Senator Steadman coming forward with this, because I do believe there's a problem that we all have to work on. My question to each one of you is that whether it's the state or the school districts or the communities that the school district represents, somehow the problem is going to have to be paid for. And we're real fortunate this year that we have the price of oil where it's at. I mean, it's a mixed blessing. I just paid my fuel bill the other day and was surprised that it was $2.47 a gallon for the fuel oil that I'm paying for. But it's good that we have the $600 or $600 million surplus. The question that I would present to you is, we know that the health insurance costs are not going to go down in the retirement plan. We know that in our own districts. I mean, that's been one of the biggest increases that we've seen. We know that whether the state pays for it or that we pay for it in the district, the increased cost in the retirement is going, we're going to have to pay it one way or the other.
So I guess the biggest question, the biggest concern that I bring forward today is last year we were starting to have, I thought, some pretty legitimate discussions about how we're going to run this state on something other than oil prices. And I still think that's the number one issue that we're faced with. And I know it's a difficult task. And folks, I respect you for the job that you do. You couldn't pay me enough to do what you're doing. And I know I make a whole lot more as a superintendent than you make as a senator. But But what the concern is as a state, because the state is, you know, I get frustrated as a superintendent when people say the district. Well, the district is nothing more than the people that represent the district and the students in the district. And the state is nothing more than the people in this state. And that's great, because this is the greatest state you can live in. But we need to solve our problems financially and find a way to fund this state that isn't based on whether the price of oil is going to be $55 a barrel or it's going to be $20 a barrel. And that's what we elect you for. And I know that's not easy, because as soon as you start talking about taxes, people want to vote you out of the place. But we have got to come up with a way as a group to solve that problem. And until we do that, it doesn't matter what bump in the road we get, whether it's the retirement system or more funding for more teachers. We're always going to be faced with the fact that we're dependent upon the oil prices. So thank you for your time, and please forgive me if I've offended any one of you. That was not my intent. I appreciate the courage that I'm seeing exhibited here today.
We're not offended. Senator Bundy.
Yep.
Now, Senator Bundy might have been, so.
Yep.
I was born offended. And offensive. Thank you very much. No offense. intended or taken. As an old speech teacher, a little semantic problem of mine. We're looking at a $5.5 billion deficit in PERS and TERS. The temporary blip in cash flow, where we might have $400 or $600 million, is not a surplus. We are not rolling in dough, as it were. And some of us have been here when the price of oil was $9 a barrel, and so we share your concern. And with that in mind, I would invite you to take a look at Senate Bill 88, Senator Wilkins' bill. That is certainly a bridge to the future. And depending on how you define what a long-term fiscal plan is, this is a fiscal plan that will move out 15 or 20 years, and is one that I think will prevent us from doing what maybe I heard your sub rosa message was: let's not be like the eccentric who dies in poverty with $1 million stuck under the mattress.
Any other comments for Steve? Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
We appreciate
it.
We're not offended at all. Thank you. Is there anyone else in the room who wishes to testify today? Okay. Come forward. Give your name and who you represent, please.
My name is Rich Carlson, superintendent at Quonset City School.
Rich, what?
Carlson.
Carlson. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Not Mick Jagger.
No.
First of all, I would like to thank the committee for taking on this difficult task. I think that if we're looking at a $5.5 billion problem, one has to logically assume that there is a major problem that has to be fixed. To think that this is something that you can do without really taking a look at the entire system, I think is simply idiotic. Whether I completely agree with 141 or not, that I guess I don't know enough about the details, but I do applaud the commitment of this group to take a look at 141 and to fix the PERS and TERS system. My concern is simply a matter of logistics, I guess, and wedding this to House Bill 1 and the base funding for education. I think that there are two separate issues, and I would really encourage you to separate both, which have merit on their own. And that is my statement.
You know, I would suggest that what you've said is exactly true, and they are two separate issues, and we want them to be that way. And were it not for the pros and cons dilemma, $38 million would not be in the base student allocation this year. And I think we've gone quite a ways, because there are a lot of people in the building who don't want the $38 million even tied to the base student allocation at all. And we have said, in order to generate more conversation and more cooperation and to really move forward on SB 41, we will have it as a proviso that with the passage of this, it is attached and does become part of the formula. And so they are inextricably tied, and yet they're very, very, very separate. And in some ways, it's duplicitous to say we've raised the base student allocation $70 million, $80 million, $60 million, whatever, if we know more than 50% of that is going toward the PERS and TERS problem we have. And that doesn't even speak to the $70 million for the rest of the state and all the state agencies that we have to fund, plus the university. And it's just, this just grows like topsy, and this didn't even start to talk about next year on top of that. And so it's a big deal. And we need, you know, people like you to really get into this and delve into it and see if you can figure out some way to help us work through this.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions for Rich Carlson? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the room who would like to testify? Do you dare risk coming to the table and being offended? We'll take a brief at ease. Order. We're going to go ahead and continue our discussion, and we have about 10 minutes more we can kind of devote to this today. And Senator Stedman, I have an idea you might want to
say a few words.
Say some words today.
Yes, Madam Chair. I think as we go forward in something as complex and as sensitive as this, like we get into a lot of rhetoric to make one point versus another point, and I would just like to again restate that the retired employees, both TERS and PERS, their benefit structure is not in jeopardy. There's nothing or any intent to remove any of the retired folks' benefit structure, so that they don't have to be concerned, although I would recommend that they follow the process because they are part of the state. The current employees, there is some issues in here that will affect them moderately. The intent is not to make a radical change on the current three tiers or two tiers for TERS, but to bring forward some points for discussion. We always have to be concerned about cost containment and fairness of the fee structure. There's also nothing in this bill to, or very little, I guess the concept is there, but to deal with the restructuring or modification of the $5 billion underfunding. There are two distinct problems. In my opinion, it's more important that we deal with the board issues and the new tier issue, then come back and deal with the underfunding, because if we restructure the underfunding, we could very easily just continue to fall into underfunding traps going forward, and we'll never get out of the dilemma. So for those that, you know, that bring up there's nothing to deal with the underfunding, I'd say this problem dealing with TERS and PERS is going to go on for quite some time after Senate Bill 141 either gets adopted or completely modified and renamed and renumbered. We're definitely going to come back and deal with the underfunding issue and take that head on. The competitive nature of the new tier structure, it's really easy to over-dramatize it as being
to a point where people are going to live in poverty after they work 20 or 30 years. I don't believe that's true. Most people around the country try to save about 10% a year for retirement, and that's roughly what's in here, a little more than that. Those numbers, those contribution amounts, are not set in stone. They're a point for discussion to begin, and you know, I expect some of the labor organizations to come forward with some different amounts and some of their comparison work that they're going to do, and that's fine. The work on this bill, especially the new tier, was started by the PERS and TERS board at the request of the Senate Finance Committee. This is something that was not started a month ago or 2 months ago. It's been in the works for many, many months, and there's been a lot of work and effort put in it. One of the, I think, major points that we need to remember, because we've talked here about the cost incurred not only this year, last year we did a big increase in school funding, partly due to the increase in the TERS and PERS. This year we have another increase. Clearly there's going to be debate in the future. But when we look at an increase to deal with the past service liability or the $5 billion, what we're doing is we're diverting today's cash flow that should be going into the classroom, or if we're concerned about or looking at cities and municipalities, the money should be going to street improvements and sewer improvements and taking care of the fire station, things along those natures. And at a state level, we have all of our different departments, if it's fish and game or DOT or whatever, but we're diverting cash flow from this generation to pay for liabilities incurred from a previous generation. And it goes clear back into the 70s. So I think we need to be very concerned that we don't unduly burden future generations of Alaskans to pay for the benefit structures of today and yesterday. And I can use myself for an example. I'm almost 50. Longevity in my family runs into the 90s. I think it's extremely difficult for the state of Alaska to forecast what the health care costs for a fellow like myself that's 50 that could live into their 90s. And you know, we need to, as we go forward, we need to be able to have a benefit structure in place that's fair for the employees and fair for the citizens of the state. There's got to be a balance, and I think right now it is debatably out of balance, because we are definitely diverting our cash flow for today to deal with issues. Some of them are 30 years old, and I don't think that's right, and it's very easy to overlook. And now, as far as we go forward, I encourage people, when they come forward to testify, like it's been mentioned earlier, to please come forward with some amendments. Even if they don't have the exact verbiage, they can get the point across on the table. We've got the staff and the ability here to, you know, to put it in the proper type of language, and we can get it on the table and talk about it. And once we can focus it down to the issues at hand, we'll get to a bill that is preferred over the original introduction. I assume that we're going to be making things better as we go forward, because there's really nothing in here cast in concrete. And then once we get the final bill in front of us, have the debate and have a vote. With that, Madam Chair, I am looking forward to more on-point recommendations coming from, especially the more professional people involved, if it's the labor unions or our management or what have you, the individual citizens around the state. I expect that they'd have a little more difficulty in just trying to assimilate and get hold of the data. But clearly for the other folks, let's try to keep it on point and off the rhetoric as much as possible so we can move forward.
Senator Bending.
Thank you. Mr. Senator Stillman, if there were a couple of comments made as we went along about this 141 doesn't address the $5.5 million gap, at least not immediately. My thoughts are, of course, that 141 addresses the possibility of the creation of another $5.5 million gap somewhere into the future, and so it's necessary, but have you given some thought, and what is your reaction to the idea that we've got 141 here and got $5.5 million over here? How do they relate, and how do we also then begin to address the $5.5 million?
Madam Chair, what I'd like to see the Senate Finance Committee do going forward, and this is my personal viewpoint, I'd like to see us adopt Senate Bill 141 with revisions, make it as best as we can, or the best we can, task the new board to work over the summer and come back, and into the fall, come back to the legislature next winter with specific recommendations on how they plan on getting the liabilities and assets back in line or back in balance, which is going to take years, and then for us to work through that process. One of the issues that was brought up today, or one of the potential solutions, is doing an equity infusion from the permanent fund, stripping the $5 billion out of the corpus of the permanent fund, call it earnings reserve or principal. That's one-fifth of the permanent fund. I would be very surprised if that solution is a solution that prevails. But clearly, you know, that is an option. There's other options out there as far as changing some of the targeted funding ratios or funding levels. We can look at cost containment issues. We can look at using, you know, time to hopefully alleviate part of that. There's also being circulated in the building here from some finance companies or investment companies off Wall Street doing pension bond restructuring, basically borrowing more and making a spread. There's some issues with that, that are both positive and negative. But I think the issue here is, if we were to tie in a restructuring of the liability with the restructuring of the retirement system, it becomes so complex that I think it would be too easy to get off point in the discussion. And it was, by the group of us that were working on this, it was discussed as far as the order of how we were going to proceed, and it was clear that the order was preferred to deal with the structural problems with the boards, the interaction, why we got here, fix that first, then take on and deal with the $5 billion. Otherwise, like you had mentioned, Senator Bundy, we could very easily wake up in 4 or 5 years with another $3 to $5 billion debacle. And as the number of employees in the state of Alaska increase over time, because they accumulate over the years, and also the retirees, we're going to end up with more and more retirees relative to employed citizens. It's going to make it easier to topple into those situations under the current structure.
Thank you.
Any other comments at the table?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure whether to ask you or Senator Stedman, but you had talked about an accelerated schedule. Could you, or one of you, just kind of talk about at this table what you think to be our schedule for this legislation?
Well, as you know, as our staff have been working kind of 12 hours a day for several weeks on this, and are still actually going through some major revisions of the current legislation. And it is our wish to have something by next week, after we come back from the Easter break, that we can work through, if it takes 8 hours a day, you know, 2 hours in the morning and the rest of the day, for that time period, and get it worked through to hammer it out. Hopefully it won't take that much time. I think we know where we're headed, and unless we run into some major snags, I would certainly invite everyone
who are in the listening audience to get their amendments, suggestions, ideas, suggestions to communicate with, and all those to us post haste, and because we need to get going on this.
Thank you.
Senator Bundy.
And Madam Chair, I would guess that, at least for me, and I hope for the committee, one suggestion that we just hide our head under the blanket and hope this goes away will not be a viable alternative.
That would be so convenient. That would be wonderful, but that's not the way this is going to be solved. And we really need to be talking about the solution to this, not just having a conversation about it and then saying, oh, it really didn't happen and we don't have to worry about it. So, good comment. Any other comments? We'll meet tomorrow, and if there's any more public testimony on this, we'll take that tomorrow, and then we'll begin going over capital budget requests after that, depending on interest shown on the otherwise. No further comments? We are adjourned.